I think there are. Well, I think to your general point that you've made earlier, that we continue to try to increase the transparency of our standard setting, and more outreach and the more input we get as part of that does that. So the general answer is I think it's valuable to make sure that we're getting as much good input as we can. We have noted, for instance, when we issue a proposed standard, most of our responses we get back tend to be from accounting associations or the audit profession. This type of outreach, roundtables, et cetera, enables us to get broader participation and views of investors whom we serve in trying to prepare informative, accurate, and reliable audit reports. So not every project will have this same type of outreach, but I think conducting this kind of outreach is very helpful to getting a good understanding as we move forward of the needs.
Well, thanks for that. I may certainly agree. Let me switch to something that you and the chairman spoke about. I think I'm still not really quite clear on what the answer is. If we adopt a rule that requires the auditor to provide some additional sort of report, discuss your views of, I don't know, management's estimates, the management selection of accounting principles, judgments that have gone into the financial statements, can that be the end of the process, or would we also need to develop an auditing standard that told the auditor what type of work they needed to do in order to support the statements in that report? And is this both a disclosure requirement and an auditing standard setting project that we're at least potentially about to embark on here, or can we simply limit ourselves to the direction to disclose or give your views of information you presumably already learned in the course of conducting the audit?
Well, I'll start on this, and certainly Jennifer, and I think since you're talking about rules again, we'll probably wind up with OGC commenting also. But
I'm not asking so much from a legal standpoint. It's just given the nature of what auditing is, can auditors be asked to make additional disclosures without creating a framework underlying that for what work they have to do in order to provide those disclosures?
But I think that's a very good point. The auditors, there has to be a framework underneath it. I mean, some of the words that you hear from either the IAG group or our outreach is things that, you know, investors want to hear more about risks. But we'll need to talk about what risks we believe our standards indicate auditors are appropriate for them to address as part of their audits. In some cases, investors have asked to hear about whether the financial statements are conservative or aggressive. Well, those are terms that are not necessarily defined in GAAP, first of all, not necessarily defined in our literature. And in some cases, it can be as bad for a set of financial statements to be conservative. Some might feel that that's building up a bunch of cookie jar reserves and not necessarily a positive thing. So we don't want auditors to go out and just start using words about, I think these financials are conservative, they're aggressive, the policies are this or that. So I think we have to certainly make sure that it's embedded in the auditing standards, first of all, what the auditor has to do, and therefore what the auditor can report on has a foundation on that, as opposed to simply expressing views that are not tied at all to auditing standards or procedures that we have in place. Does that help at all?
Yeah, it does help, and it's certainly not something that I've thought all the way through, and I hope we'll learn something about it in response to the...
I don't think I've thought it all the way through either.
But it does seem to me that we maybe perhaps have two challenges here in defining what else we want from the auditors is just the first one, and then creating that framework or that set of requirements for what that means and how they produce and support that information is the second. But we'll see where we go. It may be a related question. I mean, the chairman made some comments about boilerplate. I guess that's a derogative term. But I've also kind of wondered how we would prevent what I'll call an auditor free writing exercise from deteriorating, if that isn't too judgmental, deteriorating into boilerplate. I wonder if the firms wouldn't have a strong incentive to create a series of standardized statements and then pick the one that they thought fit for each particular client rather than actually letting the engagement partner or even somebody in the national office creates sort of a free-writing one-off statement about each particular audit client's judgments. And maybe that wouldn't be bad. I may be wrong, but I think that's what the Cohen Commission had in mind, that there would be a series of standardized explanations that the auditor could.
That was a recommendation of the Cohen Commission, that there could be standardized alternative expressions that could be made by the auditor about the financial statements. I think your question is a good one, and it's part of what we have to explore in both the concept release and then ultimately the proposed standard itself. There are probably pros and cons. The thought of a lot of simply freelance reports by a group of auditors in a large firm who didn't share consistent views could have the potential for negative market outcomes if they didn't express them in a consistent basis. On the other hand, simply turning to a purely boilerplate report, I don't think would wind up meeting the needs of investors at the end of the day either. So I don't think we have answers for all of this yet, but these are the challenges we have to address as part of this project.
I'm a little different topic. I just wonder if you could expand a little, or if you have additional ideas at this point about how we would go about, I'll say, requiring the use of emphasis paragraphs in certain situations, and what situations those might fit for. Again, whether that would be a sort of a standardized statement or something else. It's kind of an intriguing idea. I guess intriguing because everybody's heard of emphasis paragraphs, but I think very few people have ever seen one currently. But I'm not sure I quite comprehend what the situations are in which we might bring them into play.
Well, you can pick up a set of financial statements today for some of the large financial institutions, and the financial statements will be well over 100 pages, or even, I think, some of the auto industry, if you pick up a set of financial statements, it could be around 100 pages. A lot of information in there, and, of course, while it's all required by GAAP, maybe different portions of it are far more important to understanding certain critical aspects about that company. Certain mandated types of areas where we'd suggest that auditors have to bring things to the attention of investors could include material uncertainties that might be somewhere buried in those 100 pages of financial statements, that whether it's litigation or some other type of uncertainty. Sometimes, as we've talked about before in the presentation, much of financial reporting has significant measurement uncertainty around it, and pointing the investors to those areas where there are greatest measurement uncertainty or the use of unobservable inputs, and about those unobservable inputs would be kind of additional areas as well. And again, as we've discussed, those areas that have the greatest degree of estimation and variability. So I think there's a number of areas where it's critically important to understand that the financial statements don't represent this single penny earnings per share that everybody thinks they do, but there's a lot of uncertainty and variability around it that would help an investor better assess the value of that investment and potential variables of it. So I don't think we have a crisp single list yet, but I think we could probably come to one.
There's so much that could be asked about here. I'll limit myself to one more question in one more area. I mean, I think everyone who's spoken so far this morning has referred to the similar projects that are underway by other bodies. I think the IAASB, I guess, is about to come out with something. The EC's green paper touches on this. The FRC, IASCO. Jim made what I thought was a very persuasive fundamental statement about the uniqueness of our markets and broad investor participation in our markets. Do you have concerns about differing reporting models emerging that would be mandatory under different auditing regimes? I mean, I guess on the one hand, kind of going into this, it seemed to me it would be very awkward if an auditor in Europe, for example, had to provide one kind of an ADA, and an auditor in the United States had to prepare another kind of an ADA, particularly given the multinational nature of so many audit clients today. On the other hand, the point about our markets being different and the level of investor participation in our markets being different is is very valid. We haven't accepted the idea that we should change our auditing standards to conform to the ISO's and have one worldwide set of auditing standards. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts would be about whether we're better off with one worldwide supplemental reporting model or whether perhaps we need one that's unique to the United States and we really care what the rest of the world does in this regard.
Jennifer, do you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, I'll take that. We have been, as you mentioned, and as I had mentioned earlier, too, just monitoring carefully what other groups are doing, like the IAASB, European Commission, FRC, IOSCO. Where those groups are today are at a similar phase where we are, I would say. They haven't come across with any specific recommendations in areas. They've been some have gone ahead and issued questions or consultation paper like the European Commission's Green Paper. Others have yet to do so, such as the IAASB has yet to issue anything. And IOSCO issued a paper a couple of years ago, but I think they're monitoring developments of others, which you know many other groups such as ours are moving forward. You talked about, Dan, differences in reporting, and there's differences in reporting that exist today. There's differences in auditing standards that exist today. And as we've, in our standard setting, as we've come up with new standards such as risk assessment, we've continued to monitor what others are doing, but there's areas where we find it makes sense for us to be different. So I think with the auditor's report, and the different unique environment that the United States is in compared to other countries around the globe, we will have those same considerations as we consider what's best for companies, for investors of U.S. public companies. So with that said, we will be monitoring what others are doing. We have seen the French report that does have a different type of report today that's been in existence for 5 or so years, which highlights certain areas of significance in the auditor's view and refers back to the financial statement. Some have called that kind of an expanded type of emphasis of matter type of reporting. That is a different type of model, and from our understanding, that model has been working. So I think differences can exist. They do exist today, given different markets, but we will certainly continue to monitor what others are doing. And there may be needs for us to communicate further with certain regulators as we all move forward along and analyzing this issue.
Well, and I think every standard-setting project we put out, we hear from commenters about the similarities and differences between what we're proposing and the ISO's. I suspect as all these projects unfold, consistency or lack thereof in this area will also be something to be very, very interesting to the profession.
As Jennifer said, we are trying to stay as close as possible to those other projects right now, but at the end of the day, I think we'll be recommending what we think is best for U.S. investors.
Well, again, thanks for all your work on this. I do think that for both the investors and for the profession, this is perhaps the most important project we're currently working on or maybe even likely to work on at least in the next year or so. So thank you.
Mr. Harris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I commend you and before that, Acting Chairman Gelzer, for taking on this issue of modernizing the auditor's report and support the timeline that you have laid out and that has been posted on our website. Our mandate, as Marty Bauman pointed out from the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, is, quote, to protect the interests of investors in the preparation of, among other listed items, informative audit reports. And I believe this project is an important step to the board's fulfilling that directive. As was referenced earlier, last Wednesday at our PCOB Investor Advisory Group meeting, Professor Joe Carcello made what I thought was a compelling presentation for improving the auditor's report. Fellow advisory group members included Gus Sauter of Vanguard, Norman Harrison of Breeden Capital, Ann Yerger of the Council of Institutional Investors, who all joined Professor Carcello in making this presentation. Also participating in the research and preparation of the presentation were Brandon Becker of TIA CREF, Michael Head of TD Ameritrade, Bonnie Hill of Icon Blue, Pete Nactway of Legg Mason, Ann Simpson of CalPERS, and Eric Vincent of OPRE. Osprey. As part of their research, the group surveyed 300 leaders from investment banks, hedge funds, private equity funds, mutual funds, endowments, and pension funds on the usefulness of the current auditor's report and suggestions for improvements that might better serve investors' needs. Responses to this survey represented well over $8 trillion under management. Some of the major points I took away from that presentation, and Marty and Jennifer have referenced a number of them, including the following. Most investors responding to the survey believe the current auditor's report does not provide valuable information that is integral to understanding the financial statements. Investors want auditors to discuss their assessment of management's estimates and judgments and how the auditors arrived at that assessment. And the majority of investors would also like more information regarding areas of high financial statement and audit risk, unusual transactions, the quality of an issuer's accounting practices and policies. During the discussion that followed, I was struck by Ann Simpson of CalPERS' graphic depiction of the auditor's report for 2008, 2009, and 2010 for one of the many companies that were recipients of TARP funds. As she held up copies of each year's report of that issue for the people around the table to see, she described the reports as, quote, word for word, exactly the same, with the 2008 report costing $119 million, the 2009 report costing $193 million. She went on to say, quote, I think this example really gives a sense of the urgency of tackling this issue, close quote. Investor representatives point to the TARP recipients and a significant sampling of failed financial institutions during the financial crisis, where investors lost hundreds of billions of dollars and wonder why virtually every one of them received unqualified opinions. And they ask, why shouldn't auditors disclose to investors the same significant risks they disclose to audit committees? And why shouldn't this information be disclosed to them directly as opposed to funneled through management and audit committees? And they ask whether auditors understand that under the law, they, as opposed to management or audit committees, are the auditor's primary stakeholders. As you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, questions about the usefulness of the auditor's report have been around for decades. And Marty, you stole my quote from Emanuel Cohen, so I will not repeat it. But
sorry.
As far back as 1978, Emanuel Cohen, the former legendary chairman of the SEC, was making essentially the same point as Ann Simpson made last week. Indeed, in a 2006 report, the CEOs of the largest six audit firms acknowledged that, quote, users of financial information may demand to receive more finely nuanced opinions from auditors about the degree of a company's compliance with a given set of standards or the relative conservatism of judgments compared to peer groups. Close quote. And the CEOs went on to say, quote, investors even may want the auditor's views about the overall health and future prospects of the companies they audit. So even leaders of the profession foresaw the likely need and demand of investors for more information. And more recently, in 2008, the Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession urged the PCAOB to, quote, undertake a standard-setting initiative to consider improvements to the auditor's standing reporting model. As has been pointed out, dissatisfaction with the current auditor's reporting model is not limited to the United States. The European Union has released a green paper calling for improvements in communication between auditors and investors, and the UK's Financial Reporting Council has issued new reporting proposals, quote, so that annual reports, including audited financial information, deliver greater value to investors and serve the public interest better. As Mr. Barnier and leaders of the profession have each acknowledged, the status quo is not an option. Once again, I want to commend you, Chairman Doty, former Chairman Geltzer, the board, and Marty and his team for making this issue a priority for the board and for an approach that includes a comprehensive outreach to solicit input from a wide variety of interested parties, including investors, issuers, audit committees, and auditors. And as I mentioned at the outset, I support and look forward to meeting the timeline that has been laid out for our consideration of this issue. And I join you and all the other board members in complementing the efforts of our chief auditor, Marty Bauman, Jennifer Rand, Dan Mutzig, Jessica Watts, and Deanne Jules, from Marty's staff, and Bob Burns and Nina Majuri-Azad from the General Counsel's Office, who I know have been working on this and will continue to work on it. Let me start with one of the questions that the auditors are raising, and that is, what has been the reaction of issuers and management to why shouldn't auditors disclose to investors the same significant risk they disclose to audit committees?
In general, response of management and audit committees would be that that takes place in a two-way dialogue with a fairly extensive exchange of information, so a greater foundation about what the issues are that are being discussed, such that they have the right context for it. Their concern is just taking that information, for instance, and laying it out coldly may be misunderstood by the markets and may have adverse consequences, one, and two, that their general view that if there's information to be reported, it should be reported by management or the audit committee. So those would be the responses of audit committee members or managements to that.
I think that one of the comments that you made was that investors represent the customers of the auditors. And I think Jim Croker, the SEC chief accountant, recently made a similar remark at the December 2011 AICPA annual conference on SEC and PCAOB developments. So my question is, who do you think auditors view as their primary customers? Management, audit committees, or investors, and in what order?
Well, I'll tell you the view of investors on this. Investors' view on this clearly is that they have not been viewed as a customer, that they believe that auditors have traditionally viewed management as their customer, and maybe in more recent post-Sarbanes-Oxley years, they've begun to view the audit committee as their customer, but certainly investors have no indication that they have been viewed as a customer. So that would be their response to that question.
No, but I think the more direct question is, who do auditors view as their primary stakeholders based upon your outreach?
Yeah, I don't know that we specifically asked that question of auditors. Jennifer, did we?
We did not specifically get we did not get into a detailed discussion with them on that specific topic. But certainly investors feel that by modifying the auditor's report to include more information that would be useful to investors, all the type of things for change that we've been hearing would help change the auditor's focus. They do have a perception that the investors are not the auditor's customer, and they do think that moving changes in that direction would help right-size that so that auditors do think of investors as their customer.
What's your sense? Because I get the feeling that the profession would very much like to funnel a lot of what investors would like to receive through management and the audit committee. Is that a correct assumption, or is that?
I think auditors have said that they believe that information about the financial statements should come from the preparers or from the audit committee, and that if there's greater information that is desired by investors about the audit, then that should come from the auditors. Our conversations with auditors were pretty extensive, and I think they are prepared to talk to investors in a greater degree about the audit risk they've identified and their response to audit risk. They also talked about expanding the auditor's role, such that the auditor would provide provide assurance on MD&A or portions of MD&A, which would likely improve the quality of MD&A, thus giving investors greater information about what they want. So I have seen responsiveness here from the audit profession to look to ways to try to get to some solutions to try to help investors in this regard, although their general overall viewpoint is when it comes to discussing the financial statements themselves and views about the financials, they believe that that's a requirement that should come from FASB and or the SEC for enhanced discussion of the financial statements by management and or the audit committee.
Is there any lowest common denominator yet that you have whereby there be consensus on any issue with respect to what additional changes ought to be made in the audit report?
Well, there are just different views from the different constituents. Clearly, the views from the investors. You know, investors, although many of them want this auditor's discussion and analysis, many other investors who we have a great deal of respect for and in our conversations and dug into this also felt that a step forward of pointing we, the investors, to the most significant risks in the financial statements, the greatest variables in the financial statements, some of the things we talked about before in the matters of emphasis, felt that that would be an important step forward if we didn't get to an AD&A sort of disclosure. So investors, have maybe want something up here, but understand that potentially maybe there's reasons they can get something that will help them and not achieve 100% of their needs, if that's what you mean by lowest common denominator. I think when it comes to all parties agreeing on something, all parties agree that the standard auditor's report could be improved, the language in that could be clarified, and I think all parties agree that there could be improved disclosures to investors about the variability in financial statements and measurement uncertainty. The issue comes as to who should present that and then who should attest to it.
And then I just have two more questions. Well, I got a lot more questions, but only two that I'll ask. Warren Buffett has said that as an audit committee member, he would ask, what is it that the auditors know that if they were investing in this company, they as investors would want to know and have out there publicly? From your research efforts, can you comment on whether others feel that this concept extends beyond audit committees to include investors?
I think this is the fundamental concept that investors are looking for. They're looking for investors, for the auditors to give them the information that investors feel they really need to make an informed decision. As they wade through 100 pages of financial statements, what is the information that would be most valuable to that auditor if he was making, or he or she were making, an investment decision? What should I know as the investor as the most important piece of information? I think it's very similar. That's the message we by and large heard from investors.
And then the final question I have relates to cost. The recommendations from the Investor Advisory Group were clear in that according to the results of their survey, one of the most desired changes included an auditor's discussion of its assessment of estimates and judgments made by management. Investors would also like to know how the auditor arrived at that assessment. When asked, the advisory group members felt that the cost of this additional information would be minimal, because investors are not asking the auditors to do any more work other than to describe their findings in a report to investors. What are your thoughts about the potential costs involved with reporting this kind of information?
Well, it would be a new type of report, first of all, and I think that would require some additional work to construct a new report. As we discussed before with Dan Gelser's questions, we'd be developing some rules and some standards around that report. Importantly, though, I think for a firm, what auditors would say with a firm of 1,500 public companies and several hundred partners, there'd be a great concern on their part of partners going off and writing freelance reports on their own about their views of financial statements without developing some sort of consistency within the firm as to how they thought about these different issues. So they'd have to build some sort of quality control mechanisms within the firm to review these reports. Just like MD&A takes a fair amount of time, even though management has the underlying financial information, it takes a lot of time for to write an MD&A, to review it, have counsel review it, to ensure that investors are getting a good product. I think auditors would say we'd want to go through that same effort as well. So I think the cost is probably greater than was laid out at the IAG meeting.
I think I must be missing something, because in essence I think what investors are asking for is that investors get the same risk disclosures that the audit committee gets in management. And if that's the case, I'm not sure where the added cost would come from. But I've more than used my time. I just wanted to make that editorial comment.
Actually, both you and Dan Gelser have been very economical, and I should say that the respect which the new board members have for the efforts that Dan Gelser and Steve Harris and others have expended in getting us this far, while we were all three looking at the board from the outside, is evidenced by the comments you've heard today. So the new board members are bursting with questions. And Mr. Ferguson, do you want to lead off?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a very brief statement. First of all, let me join with you in thanking Steve Harris and Dan Gelser and the staff for getting this project as far as it is before we ever got here. It's, I think, a remarkable and admirable effort. For at least 40 years, though, the phrase expectation gap has been used to describe the difference between the levels of expected performance as envisioned by the auditor and by the users of financial statements. And in those 40 years, there have been a number of commissions that have looked at the role of the auditor, including the Cohen Commission and the Treadway Commission in the 1970s and 1980s. Those commissions led to a change in the audit report that added the scope paragraph to define the respective responsibilities of management and the independent auditor, to describe the work performed by the auditor and the limits of the auditor. The changes, however, did not reduce the, or did not eliminate the use of the and the perceived expectations gap. The expectations gap was just as strong after those changes as it was before. So as a result, at least in part as a result of that, the Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, the ACAP profession, recommended that the PCAOB undertake a standard-setting initiative to consider changes to the auditor standard reporting model. So that because the standard wording does not adequately reflect the amount of the auditor work and judgment. I'm delighted that you've undertaken a project to consider improvements to the audit reports. Business operations, particularly those of the largest global enterprises, grow ever more complex. Our financial markets spawn new investment vehicles at dizzying speed, many of which rely on assumptions, judgments, and estimates about valuations and future events. The SEC, in its management discussion and analysis rules, has actually taken into account these changes, and the issuer's financial statements have evolved over time to include disclosures about these items. But the auditor's report has stayed the same, even though presumably, in order to audit these financial statements, the auditor's work has had to evolve just along with management's work in preparing its financial statements. The current auditor's report gives only a limited hint about the amount of work and effort that auditors put into auditing an issuer's financial statements and related disclosures, and the issuers that the auditor found to be significant and that concerned him. And although the pass-fail auditor's report is uniform, concise, and to the point, and provides admirable comparability with other audit reports, with rare exceptions, it provides investors and other users of financial statements with little information beyond the auditor's final opinion. And investors believe that the auditors have a great deal of knowledge about the areas of risk in the company. They have views about the variability and estimates that management makes, but that information never gets to investors. May get to the audit committee, may get to management, never gets to the investors. And the auditor's report is the vehicle that auditors use to let investors know whether the company's financial statements present fairly the financial position of the company. And typically, and I think this is important, the auditor's report is addressed to the board of directors and the shareholders, or said another way, to the owners of the company or their representatives, those who have capital at risk. By its definition, it seems to me, the auditor is saying that his client is the investor. Now, the goal, one of the things I'd like to stress here is that the goal of this project is not to either fundamentally change the role of the auditor or to increase the number or type of audit procedures the auditor performs during an audit. Presumably, the auditors are already evaluating issues such as audit risk, management estimates, judgments, and fair market value estimations before they express their opinion. The goal of our exercise is to determine what type of information investors feel they need from an independent party as they are making their investment decisions, and whether the auditor or someone else can reasonably be expected to provide that information. Investors, I believe I heard from the investor advisory group, want an independent view of the kinds of things that management is saying in its financial statements. The information investors are seeking is already available to the auditor, and the goal is to determine what information should be provided to the investor. It's obvious to me that although the auditor's report has changed in the last several decades, the changes have not addressed the investor's perceived needs and have not materially reduced the so-called expectations gap. As standard setters, I think we need to be ever mindful of the needs of investors. I believe this project is a step in the right direction, and I applaud the Office of the Chief Auditor for conducting such an extensive outreach to investors, preparers, and audit committees, and I look forward to the issuance of concept reliefs and the staff's recommendations on how to address the investors' concerns. Finally, I'd like to thank the many PCAOB staff members for working on this project. Marty Bauman, Jennifer Rand, Dan Mutzig, Jessica Watts, Deanne Jules, Nina Mogiri-Azad, and Bob Burns. Without their hard work and creativity, we wouldn't be here today discussing the potential improvements to the auditor's reports. I'd also like to thank the many investors, preparers, auditors, and audit committee members who took time to meet with the staff and provide their views on how potentially to improve the auditor's reports. And I have just a few questions that I'd like to ask. As I listened to the information that was coming in from investors, audit committee members, preparers, and auditors, there seemed to me some fairly fundamental contradictions between what people were saying. Do you believe that there are aspects of that there are irreconcilabilities in these stances, that there are things that either we will have to choose between the views of one of these groups or another? Or is it possible that we could come up with a set of standards that actually will solve the needs of investors without being irreconcilable with what the other groups want and feel is appropriate?
Very good and a very difficult question. Certainly at one end of the extreme in terms of what investors want at this point in time, that would be very different view than what preparers and audit committees and auditors believe they can give them. At some other level, in terms of what investors said would be a big step forward, is a lot closer to where parties might be able to get on a common ground. I think laying it out in a concept release with a couple of different structures in mind and looking for comments, I think will help that process. And I do believe the various parties in this financial reporting supply chain, auditors, preparers, as well, and audit committees, understand that there's great dissatisfaction with the product by investors and that something has to be done to change here. I think, as Board Member Steve Harris said, And many have noted, the status quo is not an option. So it's a matter of reaching compromise on this issue, I think, is going to be very important.
Another area I have concern about or questions about is that some of the things that are proposed here I think would require action by either the Securities Exchange Commission or the Financial Accounting Standards Board. Is there any reason in your judgment that we cannot go ahead with our own proposals in this area and our own standards in this area, frankly, or that we must wait for action by these other bodies?
Well, I'll start. Again, I probably turn to Gordon at the end, but certainly I think with respect to some of the changes we'd like to make in the report, requiring auditors to disclose other things resulting from the audit, I believe, based on what I've heard in discussions I've had with GC, that we could propose those kind of changes on our own. There are some changes, though, that might be worthwhile to accomplish, depending upon the direction we finally went, might be beneficial to do a couple of things at the same time, such as certain improvements in the existing auditor's report, but also extending auditor's responsibilities to certain things as MD&A, as a complement to that, or portions of MD&A, which would enhance the quality of MD&A, presumably if they were reporting on it, which may require SEC action as well. So I think depending upon the route we go, some pieces we could do by ourselves, some which might be a combined good solution might require action by us and others. Would you like to comment further, Gordon and or Bob?
Just to agree with what you said, and just to clarify based on what I said before, that I think we have to be cautious of reaching conclusions, again, because we're talking about a variety of different things at this stage in this project, but certainly we do have standards today that speak to what auditors report on, and it certainly is within our mandate to expand on those things. So there are a range of things here that could be done that would be purely within the board's ability. But I think in general, once this project progresses further, once the concept release has been issued and we're more specific about what needs to be done, we'll be able to make better determinations about exactly whether it's something we can do ourselves or if there has to be some action by either, as you said, FASB or the SEC.
Thank you. And a final question. I, along with Dan Gelzer here, am terribly fearful of boilerplate and of whatever we do being degenerating into formulas that actually obscure rather than convey information. Have you thought through that issue, and have you thought how we're likely to try to deal with that? I mean, I know we talked about various alternatives, the alternative reporting mechanisms or alternative ways of phrasing things that could become formulaic. Do you think that if you did something like that, that could would give meaningful information rather than degenerating into boilerplate, or do we need to go further?
Well, your concerns are completely valid, and it's one of the biggest concerns we have as well, that the reports could somehow turn to boilerplate. Even Steve Harris mentioned a moment ago, we'll just give the audit committee the report that the auditors give to the audit committee. Well, there's some fear that that report to the audit committee would turn to be a listing of statements of here's what we did without any discussion of that's now in that audit committee report about what the auditors really found. And so if you did that, that might just be a boilerplate audit committee report given to investors. So that's one of the great fears of this project, is going down a route where the outcome is some kind of boilerplate reporting. And that's, we do want to avoid that. I mean, we're trying to make a real change here in improving the quality of what is being reported. Auditors do a very thorough job under our standards to do an audit. And we want to get that report on that audit improved so that there's greater quality to the investors. So we'll be working vigorously to ensure that try to ensure that doesn't happen.
Because the history of prior efforts to do this has not been good. It's not encouraging.
That's correct.
We need to be very, very aware of that if we want to do something.
It's a key point.
Chairman?
Now, last but far from least, the auditor on the board. New auditor on the board, Jay Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I now understand my spot in the pecking order. I guess I'm the least senior of the members. In my prepared statement, I raised many of the same comments that the other board members have raised, so I'm not going to read the entire thing, and I will echo the thanks without calling them out specifically for all the hard work that's been done. But I'm going to comment on a couple perspectives that I thought of as I'm pondering this issue. And as I was thinking about this, I was reminded of my days in school when the teacher would assign the class to do a book report. And I remember that I really liked to read. I really did not like to write about what I had read. And I think about my kids and the challenges when they were assigned a book report and had to be a certain number of words long, and they would sit and count the words time and time again to get it up to the exact number that they needed to have. And thinking about if they were assigned to write a book report on a short story, that would be one level of challenge. If they were assigned to write a book report on Moby Dick, that would be an entirely different level of challenge for them. And I'm also thinking about how many different interpretations that the school teachers over the years have gotten on books like Moby Dick, and how much they maybe smiled and smirked and wondered how creative of an interpretation that was. And so as I think about this, so I'm thinking in many respects a financial statement, an annual report, is like a book report on the company's results of the operations for the year. There are many thousands or even millions of transactions that get summarized down into just one line item in the financial statements. The footnotes describe the accounting principles and a few of the details behind it. MD&A goes through the explanation of the numbers and the trends. And the auditor's report has historically just had the simple pass-fail statement on whether the financial statements present fairly, and that is distilling it down from the hundreds of pages. And so I kind of think of this as the investors are telling us, and we're hearing the message loud and clear, that effectively they want a further executive summary or book report on the book report with a further discussion of how good are the numbers. And so that's kind of what's shaping my thought process on this, and we have a difficult task ahead of us. And one of the fundamental questions that we've talked about here a lot has been what is the fundamental role of an auditor? At the IEG meeting last week, it was just very clear that there's a big difference between what auditors think and what investors think. And having spent the last 32 years as an auditor, I think I know what auditors generally understand the role to be, which is express an opinion on the financial statements, just in the simple pass-fail statement as we're talking about. But it's just very clear that there's a big difference between what auditors think their role is and what at least some investors think the role is. So I think personally, I think we need to break this issue down into the auditor's report, separate from that broader question of what the auditor's role is. I'm trying to approach this on the basis of practically what can we get done in the near term. And I think about this, and one of the questions that Marty was asked earlier from Dan is at the heart of the issue, that I think this is just a communications exercise. This isn't about auditing or accounting. It's about telling the world what the auditor knows. And so it's going to be a bit of a challenge, and I think the board is really going to be faced with a difficult task of using our collective professional judgment to decide between the competing things that we're hearing from different constituencies, what we put out for a standard that will be clear so that the auditors can follow it, establish a framework that promotes consistency, and it's that fine line between boilerplate and consistency, all against that backdrop of being timely and cost-effective. And there's another thing I want to bring up, though, and that is oftentimes regulators like us tend to regulate in a vacuum, and there are many other things going on in the world that are so extremely challenging for companies today. And one of the things I want to bring up is the things going on at the Financial Accounting Standards Board. The accounting standards are continually in a state of flux, and there are some enormous projects that the FASB and International Accounting Standards Board are taking on as what are collectively referred to as convergence projects, which will fundamentally change the accounting and accounting systems and thought process to arrive at numbers even as basic as the single biggest number in most entities' financial statements, revenue. And the task for preparers and auditors to get ready for that challenge of these new standards coming down the road, and the effective dates have not been set, they haven't even been issued yet, but I've heard some people suggest that the effort in that will be more than what it took companies to adopt Section 404 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. So we have to be mindful of the enormous burden being placed on the preparers and the auditors relative to these new standards. And overriding all this is still the looming question about whether or if the SEC will mandate IFRS in its entirety for companies in the United States. So I think we need to be mindful of the increasing complexity that all companies are facing as we weigh these options. So as we ask ourselves if we're going to set some standards that ultimately require the auditor to prepare a further book report on the company's financial statements, will the auditor's interpretations be as diverse as the school teachers have seen about Moby Dick, and will investors truly find this useful? So, Marty, I'm just going to distill this down to one question, because many of the questions that all the board members have been covered in a variety of fashions. But just a question, do you know if anybody's actually tried to do an exercise of writing an auditor's discussion and analysis on a company's financial statements? That's going to be the proof in the pudding, is can somebody actually do it in a way that the investors find meaningful?
I'm not aware of any previous exercise where auditors have been asked to do this, other than, as I think you're aware, in private transactions, as referred to earlier, when an investor engages an auditor in a private transaction to examine the financial statements of a target, an auditor will express a view on those financial statements of whether they present fairly, and then go into substantial detail about the accounting policies and judgments and estimates and the range of reserves, et cetera, that's been done. So there is a form of long-form reporting that's been around for some time in private transactions where auditors analyze and discuss the financial statements. So that's probably the one form that I think we're both familiar with that's taken place over the years in private transactions. And, you know, to some extent, that's what we've heard from investors, that we're making an investment decision no different than in our private transaction, and we're asking for some of the same information that would be in that long-form report. And so, why can't we get that? So that's where they're coming from.
And my personal observation would be, it'd be interesting through this process to essentially challenge an investor group, an auditor, audit committee, and management to come up with an example of what would be useful to the investors, working collaboratively to figure it out so that we all had a good idea of exactly what we're looking at and maybe get a sense of what the cost element is. And I know it's going to be a challenge to do, but it's something that I think voluntarily asking someone to actually let's take a look at what this would look at and look like. And just a final observation before I stop, this question about what it's going to take to actually do this. As I think about it, Marty, if you were writing an email to Jennifer, you would put one level of review into that note. If you were writing a message to your entire team, you'd maybe put a different level into that. If you're writing a message to the board, you'd probably look at it a fair number of times and maybe ask Jennifer to reread it before you push the button. If you're writing it for the entire universe to see, there would be an enormous amount of effort that would go into making sure that the words conveyed all the things that you meant and did not convey the things you did not mean, and have a very robust review process around it. And so personally, I think that's where the review time or the additional cost will come in, is in that in that process of making sure that the words truly convey in a clear fashion to the investors and to the world what the auditor meant. And that's not a no-cost exercise, since that will be the most senior individuals on the engagement and in the firms doing that. Hard to assign that to a first-year staff accountant.
That was the point I was making earlier, that, again, if investors believe this is going to be very important to their investment decisions, we would hope that auditors take a very careful time in choosing the words carefully and thoughtfully about those financial statements so that appropriate investment decisions can be made. We don't want any adverse consequences out of some standard-setting project we embark upon. So I agree with that point fully. Also, the point you're making about getting parties to work on this beforehand, I don't want to commit to any field testing or things like that, but I do hope that we have the opportunity to work with, at a minimum, the audit profession and maybe some others to look at a set of financial statements and look at what a possible report that we're coming up with might look like before we go out and start suggesting that here's what we propose auditors start doing. So we will be constructing or trying to construct ways of how that would look in a real situation.
Good. Okay. Mr. Chairman,
are there any brief closing comments by board members? Anything that?
Well, one thing that strikes me, I'd welcome a book report, and it can be a three-word book report. One is risk, and the other one is no risk. Right now, it seems to me that we got an audit opinion which essentially says no risk. All I'm looking for is there a risk and some explanation for it? So I think the book report can be simple. But having said that, if in fact there's risk, I think some of the risk ought to be defined. So I would like to see the book report as well. But right now we've got clean book reports, from my perspective, all across the board, and that is there's no risk. And so I'd like to I'm glad we're addressing this issue, but I also agree with the analogy that we need a book report.
I think what you've heard today is a consensus by board members that there are a lot of complexities to the issue, that there's a lot to understand, and there is a great deal to think about. I would say that I think we talk a great deal in the building here about skepticism, professional skepticism. The SEC is an institution, I think it could fairly be said, whose professional skepticism is directed to the financial markets and the gatekeepers of the financial markets. Here, we have to be skeptical. Our professional skepticism has to be a skepticism, I think, that without a strong audit standard and a strong duty of care and a strong sense of clarity in what auditors do, we have to be skeptical of whether management and financial preparers will provide the information voluntarily or will be willing to acknowledge the significance of the information. What you've heard today, I think, centers around the complexities, the moving parts, the details that are the bedeviling issue that has detained and prevented change in this area for 30 years. And those kinds of details have to be addressed and dealt with by us. But at the end of the day, we help auditors. If we remain skeptical of whether management will give this information and make these financial statements clear on their own motion, and whether by giving auditors standards, clear standards, and clear guidance, we don't increase the transparency of financial reporting. We think we will. We think we have to. And I think based on the discussion, including all of these questions of board members, it's appropriate to direct the staff to develop a written concept release on possible changes to the auditor's reporting model for the board's consideration at a future public meeting. With our gratitude, you have also the green light. Please go ahead and do so. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
We are going to clear the room, I think, and then reassemble here. We have some matters to conduct as a non-public board. But thanks to the public for coming. Thanks to you all for attending and to participants on the webcast.